Good evening and welcome to your KMUD News. I'm April Lewis, reporting for KMUD from our studios in Southern Humboldt. Before the news, I'd like to invite you to support our spring drive, April 13th to the 22nd. Your donation helps us broaden our programming and keep you up to date with local news. Go to kmud.org and click the donate button. You can also give us a call at 707-923-3911. We really appreciate any amount you can give. Every day it costs $1,600 to run the station. That's $66 every hour, or about a dollar per minute. Our CPB funding isn't coming back anytime soon, as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has officially dissolved, and now our members account for one quarter of our funding. To keep our news broadcast going, we need your help. I'd like to emphasize that without this funding, without your donations, we will struggle to maintain the emergency and breaking news coverage we have brought you in the past. That includes coverage in North Mendocino and areas of Southern Humboldt with elevated fire risk, especially in this dry year. As your news director, I would like nothing more than to bring you the most comprehensive, accurate, and up-to-date emergency coverage possible. But we need the staff and resources to make it happen. Please help us as we continue to provide this essential service. Please donate. The membership drive will be this month from the 13th to the 22nd. And we appreciate all of you who have given your money and time to help KMUD. You can give at kmud.org and click the green donate button, or give us a call at 707-923-3911. And now, the news. Welcome to your KMUD local news. We'll start off with the rundown of today's top stories, followed by in-depth reporting from our news team. Starting off, we're keeping a close eye on a Supreme Court case involving the chemical giant Monsanto. The case focuses on the harms associated with the use of glyphosate, a pesticide Monsanto produces under the name Roundup. The case mainly focuses on whether federal regulations for pesticides can preempt state regulations. The case will be heard before the court on April 27th. There is also a rally scheduled by Make America Healthy Again supporters on the same date outside the courthouse titled People v. Poison. Monsanto recently filed legal briefs for the case, detailing their argument that restricting the use of glyphosate could result in massive food shortages. At the same time, the company is already offering over $7 billion for a class action settlement to resolve over 60,000 cases filed against the Roundup manufacturer. The chemical giant is citing the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, also known as FIFRA, as an excuse to skip state-level regulations. Monsanto stated in their brief that the EPA has determined that glyphosate and Roundup do not cause cancer, and that a warning stating otherwise is neither required nor permitted under FIFRA. The court is tasked with deciding whether warning labels stating that Roundup is harmful to human health can be preempted by federal law, ending warnings that are based on state-level regulations. According to research from the University of Washington, exposure to glyphosate raises the chances an individual gets diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma by 41%. Thousands of lawsuits have been filed by individuals with non-Hodgkin lymphoma claiming their disease was caused directly by exposure to Roundup. A recent EPA review of Roundup safety was vacated by a federal court for not being scientifically sound. If the court rules for Monsanto, it could result in less recourse for those whose health has been directly impacted by glyphosate exposure. President Trump signed an executive order in February citing glyphosate as the cornerstone of this nation's agricultural productivity and rural economy, while protecting its use. Attorney generals from Texas, Florida, and Ohio are among those opposed to Monsanto's case. In a brief, they stated, "Preemption through federal agency action poses particular threats to state sovereignty. We'll be following this court case closely and will update you after the hearing and as information becomes available." On Thursday, a 10-day ceasefire was declared between Israel and Lebanon. In a statement by the State Department, the two sides agreed to engaging in good faith, direct negotiations facilitated by the United States with the objective of achieving a comprehensive agreement that ensures lasting security, stability, and peace between the two countries. Previous Israeli ceasefires, especially those in Gaza, have been criticized for continued violence despite prior agreements. In Europe, the International Energy Agency, also known as the IEA, is warning that the continent could run out of jet fuel in as little as 6 weeks. In an emailed statement, the agency said several European countries may start to face shortages of jet fuel in the next 6 weeks, depending on how much they are able to import from international markets to replace the lost supply from the Middle East, which accounted for 75% of Europe's net imports of jet fuel previously. IEA Executive Director Fatah Birol told the Associated Press that the blockade in the Strait of Hormuz could result in the largest energy crisis we have ever faced. The impact is being felt in the U.S. as well, with many airlines raising fares and fees in response to the extreme rise in the cost of jet fuel since the Iran war. Prices have nearly doubled since the conflict started. The United States is a net exporter of jet fuel, but no oil market is immune to large international price fluctuations and supply changes. Many are concerned as airlines head to peak travel periods over the summer. The Pope has once again made comments starkly criticizing world leaders in ongoing conflicts. The unexpectedly forceful words came from the pontiff while visiting Cameroon. Leo stated that the world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants who manipulate the very name of God and turn a blind eye to the fact that billions of dollars are spent on killing and devastation. Yet the resources for healing, education, and restoration are nowhere to be found. The masters of war pretend not to know that it takes only a moment to destroy, yet often a lifetime is not enough to rebuild. President Trump took a lighter tone in his response, unlike previous remarks from the Pope on armed conflict. He stated at the White House, "This is the real world. It's a nasty world." And later remarked, "The Pope can say what he wants, and I want him to say what he wants, but I can disagree." The Trinity County Resource Conservation District and the Watershed Research and Training Center are providing a no-cost chipper service to Trinity County residents to help homeowners in reducing hazardous fuels and improving defensible space around their homes and outbuildings. If you're interested in signing up, you can apply at TCRCD's website or visit the TCRCD office at 30 Horseshoe Lane in Weaverville to fill out an application. Visit their website for requirements to follow in order for the service to be provided. Registration does not guarantee service. In local weather news, the National Weather Service Eureka's forecast zone changes are being implemented today, April 16th. As a reminder, this is a full refresh of fire weather forecast zones across their entire forecast area, including Del Norte, Humboldt, Trinity, Mendocino, and Lake counties. At the same time, they are also implementing a partial update to the public forecast zones for Trinity and Lake counties. This comes after feedback from many emergency management and fire partners and will result in more geographically and climatologically precise products. You can check out the new zones on the National Weather Service website at weather.gov/Eureka. Links to updated zone maps are in the news headlines section at the top of the website. Also from the National Weather Service, there is a freeze warning in place from 2 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Friday for interior valleys in Humboldt, Del Norte, Mendocino, and Trinity counties. Temperatures are expected to hit as low as 29 degrees. Frost and freeze conditions could kill crops, sensitive vegetation, and possibly damage unprotected outdoor plumbing. Take steps now to protect tender plants from the cold. And now an update from the Yurok tribe on the first egg produced by the free-flying Pacific Northwest condor population. The first egg produced by the free-flying Pacific Northwest condor population appears to be unsuccessful based on an analysis of the bird's behavior and flight patterns. However, the data is not conclusive and may remain so for several weeks. Due to the inaccessibility of the nesting area, observations of the parent's behavior will continue for confirmation. The reason biologists with the Northern California Condor Restoration Program suspect the nest has failed is because the prospective parents, condors A0 and A1, have spent an extended period together far from the nest site, at a time when parental care of a potential hatchling would be necessary for the chick to survive. Many things may have gone wrong, ranging from an infertile egg to inadequate incubation chilling the egg to hatching failure. If the egg failed to hatch, The pair could attempt to reproduce again this spring, a process biologists refer to as recycling, or more likely, they will try again next year. While it is unlikely that a chick will fledge from the initial egg, we remain pleased to have taken this first step toward successful reproduction. We continue to hold a sliver of hope that it happens this year and look forward to future attempts, knowing that the time will yet come when we have our first wild-fledged chick flying free in our homeland, said Yurok Wildlife Department Director Tiana Williams-Clausen. New condor parents frequently face challenges sustaining their first egg because of limited experience with the complex incubation process. Even if the egg has failed, there is reason for optimism, as condor parents are far more likely to produce viable offspring the older and more experienced they become. Compared to their first breeding season, the probability of successful incubation is substantially higher during condor's second season because they learn from their mistakes, said Chris West, the Northern California Condor Restoration Program Manager and a Yurok Wildlife Department senior biologist. Some condors may initiate nesting at 5 or 6 years of age, but first attempts at 7 are far more common. It is promising that A0 and A1, 2 7-year-old condors, made a solid attempt at breeding. As the oldest birds in the flock, they are leading the way for this most recent addition to the roster of condor release sites. Condors are slow to reproduce, with females laying only one egg at a time and usually nesting only every other year. Young condors take months to learn to fly and rely on their parents for more than a year. They do not reach sexual maturity until at least age 5. You can find out more information on condor conservation efforts at yuroktribe.org. It's almost that time of year again, and with great anticipation, a press release from the Kinetic Grand Championship. Ever dreamed about zooming over the sand, paddling through the water, and biking 50 miles dressed as a skunk in the Kinetic Grand Championship? Now is your chance to be part of the glory. Registration is officially open for racers and volunteers for the 57th annual event, taking place Memorial Day weekend, May 23rd to the 26th. More than just a race, the Kinetic Grand Championship is a North Coast family reunion, a joyful, multi-generational gathering where friendships are rekindled and new traditions are born. Each year, participants and spectators return to reconnect with their kinetic family, welcoming newcomers into a community built on creativity, engineering, and a healthy dose of eccentricity. Known as the triathlon of the art world, the Kinetic Grand Championship spans 3 unforgettable days and over 50 miles of beaches, roads, rivers, and trails. Since its humble beginnings in 1969 as a 2-block dash down Main Street in Ferndale, this beloved tradition has grown into a 40-plus mile adventure across the towns, waterways, and wild landscapes of Humboldt County. It's a celebration of engineering, artistry, teamwork, and pure original Humboldt County spirit. Memorial Day weekend becomes a 3-day homecoming filled with cheering crowds, outrageous costumes, and the kind of memories that last long after the finish line. Whether you're racing, volunteering, hosting out-of-town friends, or simply lining the course to cheer, there's a place for everyone in the Kinetic family. Racers and volunteers are encouraged to register early, as there's a discount before April 15th, and be part of this one-of-a-kind tradition that continues to unite generations through creativity and adventure. To learn more and register, visit KineticGrandChampionship.com. To help prepare graduates for careers in some of the nation's most in-demand fields, Cal Poly Humboldt is launching its Bachelor of Science in Health and Medical Sciences this fall. The program will equip students for careers as physicians or physician assistants, pharmacists, and other rapidly growing healthcare professions. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, employment in these fields is expanding faster than the average for all occupations, with nearly 2 million projected job openings each year. Students will also gain hands-on experience and learn basic skills using simulation and virtual reality tools in the university's Health Education Hub. The hub, scheduled to launch next year, brings together community partners and students in health-related programs to learn how integrated, real-world healthcare works. The interdisciplinary degree integrates the biological, social, and behavioral sciences that underpin modern healthcare, giving students a deep understanding of the factors that shape patient outcomes in medical research. Coursework in biology, chemistry, physics, and human anatomy is paired with studies in psychology, sociology, ethics, and child development, depending on the concentration, as well as internships and shadowing at local healthcare facilities. According to Justice Ortega, interim dean of the College of Professional Studies, great healthcare professionals need a strong foundation in science, but they also need to understand the people and communities they serve. This program helps students develop both, preparing them for a wide range of careers in today's healthcare field. The degree is part of Cal Poly Humboldt's ongoing polytechnic expansion, which has included the launch of 12 new programs since 2023. Additional academic programs will roll out this fall, and more are expected in 2029. In cannabis news, according to sales data, pre-rolls have overtaken cannabis flower as the most popular product across the American recreational marketplace. The data comes from Headset, a cannabis analytics firm who works with major brands like Stizzy, Wild, and Raw Garden. The report showed $3.6 billion in sales for pre-rolls in 2025, representing 9.8% year-over-year growth and a total market share of 15.9%. Infused pre-rolls represented 47% of total sales in the category. The data comes from surveys representing 125 cannabis brands that produce and sell pre-rolls. California led the pack in pre-roll revenue at $703.5 million, representing 52.6 million units sold at an average price of $13.35. Interestingly, California was the only market in the survey that saw negative growth for the pre-roll category, with a revenue drop of 3.3% and nearly unchanged total unit sales. The largest pre-roll brand in the survey, by far, was California-based Jeter, who sold 11 million units, resulting in $253.2 million in revenue for 2025. And now to in-depth reporting from our news team. We'll start with Daniel Mintz on State Senator Mark McGuire highlighting increased funding for firefighting during a town hall on Wednesday.
California could be facing another challenging wildfire season, but during an online town hall event, Senator Mike McGuire highlighted what he described as the state's historic investments in fighting and preventing fires. Wildfire conditions and the increased resources available to meet them were discussed during the April 15th town hall meeting. McGuire said, quote, "Unfortunately, our region has been devastated by wildfire over the past decade, but the state is, quote, laser-focused on making historic investments to be able to better protect our communities big and small. That includes funding for more CAL FIRE firefighters and the training and equipment needed to combat fires, as well as preventative measures like vegetation management." McGuire said the investments that have and will be made run into the billions of dollars.
California, over the past many years, has invested nearly $4 billion in vegetation management and wildfire prevention efforts, dead and dying tree removal, clearing back brush and trees from evacuation routes around communities, more fire breaks, and another $4 billion is on the way thanks to California voters for passing Proposition 4. $4 billion was embedded in that, and those dollars are now being spent in the coming years for wildfire prevention in our communities. These are the kinds of projects that make a real difference. You're going to hear that from our chiefs tonight, both in preventing disasters before they start and preparing the next generation of first responders.
North Coast investments include what McGuire described as 10 new quick attack type fire engines for Southern Humboldt and Northern Mendocino counties, and a new fire academy serving Mendocino and Lake counties. But McGuire raised what he called a red flag, saying funding for the U.S. Forest Service, which manages the majority of the state's forest lands, could be cut by up to 60% if the Trump administration's proposed budget is approved. And that will come on top of the recent loss of 7,000 U.S. Forest Service employees that McGuire said have, quote, either left, taken early retirements, or been fired. But state-level improvements were reemphasized later in the town hall in this exchange between McGuire and CAL FIRE Northern Region Chief George Morris.
In your tenure in CAL FIRE, this has been the biggest change, the biggest enhancement, most major improvements that I know we've seen in generations for CAL FIRE. Your opinion, though, Chief Morris.
Yeah, I've been a fire chief in CAL FIRE for the last 12 years, running a unit and running regions. And I don't recognize my own department, how much it's changed in that time period. During the Valley Fire, we had 6,500 firefighters. We're going to be close to 14,000 employees in the department, 12,000 of those being firefighters. It is incremental change and it can feel slow, but it actually, I think we've made quantum leaps in this decade with the support of the administration and the legislature. And I think we're getting to a better day there. We're using that same workforce to reduce the threat that we're experiencing on the landscape. And it can feel slow and it can feel daunting, but the investments are making a difference. They are making a change.
As for what lies ahead this summer and fall, what's described as a super El Nino weather pattern could develop. Morris suggested it's a wild card in the upcoming season.
Weather patterns are going to be difficult to predict under an El Nino condition. So the last strong El Nino that we had was in 2015 and 2016. And if you recall in Lake County, pretty severe fires, the Rocky, the Jerusalem, and then the Valley. And that really ushered in the era of the mega fire, were those fires. El Nino can mean a lot of things. It can mean that we're going to see more moisture than normal. It can mean heat domes followed by tropical moisture. It also can mean extended dry periods over a swath of California. So I think it's really important to watch short range weather forecasts this summer, not the long range, because there's so much variability under an El Nino condition. So a strong El Nino in 2015 meant a lot of rain and a lot of Pacific cyclone activity, but it meant the rain stayed off of the California coast and never came in. So just pay attention to short range forecasts. If you feel the weather getting hot and dry, pay extra attention. Look at the platforms for information that you might seek, whether that's fire.ca.gov, it's Watch Duty, or whatever you trust for information to give you as much lead time as you can to evacuate or to make decisions for your family.
McGuire said the El Nino conditions could spell trouble, but he reiterated the state's readiness, saying the number of CAL FIRE firefighters has been doubled in the last 10 years, and about 2,000 more will be hired in the next 4 years. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Next, we have a story on 450 free 2,500-gallon water tanks making their way to Mendocino County.
The Mendocino County Fire Safe Council is allocating close to 200 free water tanks to more than a dozen FireWise communities, neighborhood fire safe councils, and fire departments throughout the county. In 2022, the California Department of Water Resources was allocated $10 million from the governor's 2022 budget to establish a water tank program as part of its Small Communities Drought Relief Program. The one-time water tank portion of the program is ending at the close of this fiscal year. Elena Masagi, a senior water resource engineer in Fresno and assistant program manager for the Small Community Drought Relief Program, reported that about 1,000 tanks will be distributed across California as a result of the program, with roughly 450 of them going to Mendocino County. There were no income requirements for the grant, but only public agencies such as cities and counties, tribes, water districts, and nonprofits were eligible to apply. A minimum of 5 2,500-gallon tanks were delivered to each applicant to be distributed to residents in their communities. The Mendocino County Fire Safe Council spread the word as soon as the Mendocino County Department of Transportation reached out with news of the opportunity. Soon, the Laytonville Grange, the Caddo Tribe of the Laytonville Rancheria, and other organizations put in requests on behalf of local residents. On the coast, the Mendocino City Community Services District for the Village of Mendocino and the Mendocino Fire Protection District collaborated to receive 65 tanks. During the drought of 2021, the town of Mendocino was famously short on water. Nearby water districts restricted water sales to customers within their own boundaries. An initiative to truck water from Ukiah, which has abundant groundwater, made national and even international headlines. MCCSD Superintendent Ryan Rhodes recalled telling the state at the time that he thought a water storage program would be a much more cost-effective option. I don't know if it was because of us, he said recently. Probably not, but in 2022, DWR started a water tank program. Early this year, he too received a notice from the Mendocino County DOT about the free tank opportunity for local residents. He's fielded requests from as far away as Willits, but said that people who live within his fire district boundary will have first priority. He's maintaining a waiting list in case recipients who are already in line are unable to accept tanks for some reason. As of April 9th, 20 of the tanks had already arrived at NCCSD's water treatment plant. The new owners will be responsible for picking the tanks up and covering the cost of installation. Misagi reported that about 15 organizations in Mendocino County reached out to her, though not all of them finalized an agreement to receive tanks. She noted that the water must be used for domestic or emergency purposes, not for irrigation or landscaping. In all, about half the tanks in the DWR program will find their home in the northern part of the state. Misagi remarked that,
"You guys are popular."
Water tanks are also popular. The MCFSC runs an annual microgrant program that funds small neighborhood fire resiliency projects, and one of the most common items that communities request is water tanks. According to Eva King, MCFSC's community outreach coordinator,
"We've had a lot of practice allocating these water tanks."
All that practice came in handy when it was time to start delivering the tanks.
"And especially in Mendocino County with these rural communities, you're looking at a lot of long dirt driveways, a lot of tight turns, a lot of overgrown vegetation that are on those driveways, a lot of similar complications actually that fire engines have when they're trying to respond to fires."
That is part of the reason the MCFSC leans so heavily on neighborhood fire safe councils, who have the local knowledge to pinpoint who needs what.
"We have such a massive county with so many different communities, and so that's where we really rely on our neighborhood fire safe council leaders to reach out to their own communities to make sure that when these types of opportunities arise, they're able to disseminate that information, make sure it gets out to their neighborhood, make sure that people are able to apply for these types of grants and have access to things like water tanks or other community resources that can be used. In Mendocino County, it's one of the most powerful and impactful ways that we have actually of getting the word out there."
Hearing about opportunities like this is a great reason to be connected with a neighborhood fire safe council or FireWise community. And MCFSC has over 80 affiliated groups throughout the county. To learn more, visit www.firesafemendocino.org/NFSC for Neighborhood Fire Safe Council.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Gabriel Zucker. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org. And now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. If you have story tips, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. I'd also like to remind folks before the end of our broadcast that our spring membership drive is April 13th to the 22nd. Please click the green donate button on kmud.org or call 707-923-3911. Your donations help keep our local news on the air. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.